Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny show. Thank you for joining us today. I'm really excited. There's a ton to talk about. Let me introduce my guest first, Jose.
What's going on?
It's great to see you again.
Likewise. Thank
Good
you
to
for
have
having
you
me
back on the show. Mm-hmm. Of course. Sean Finnegan.
How's it going, everyone?
Sean, you've been raiding all day.
Yeah, just stepped out of the IGN Plays Destiny stream. We've been going all week, all day, and it's been super crazy. Just spent 7 hours raiding and like 12 hours farming to get raid ready
That. Because you were way below 280.
Everyone said it was impossible, but I went from 237.
I was like, no way you're going
to
be ready.
237 tomorrow. Light to 283 night to 283 light in one day. It was crazy.
Who did you pay for this? Yeah. Whose Xbox account did you spend money on?
Oh man, it was crazy, dude. I just have a really good fire team who are all very giving people.
Okay, cool.
So today we're going to talk about a few things. We're going to open with our overall impressions of the content now that we've got to experience the raid and try it out. We haven't completed it yet, but we'll get there. We're going to talk about Xur and his new systems and how we feel about them. And finally, we're going to talk about the raid. And we're doing that last because I know a lot of people like to experience it without knowing anything. So that'll be kind of a spoiler territory. Hmm. Jose, you're actually going to leave because you don't want to know anything.
Right? I don't know. You guys should tread softly when we talk about the overall game as it is, because I'm sure we're going to have moments where the raid will come up. Mm-hmm. And I just don't want to know. We're going to start it either tonight or tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited. So real quick, around the table, your light level and your level. First of all, 40 within like 30 seconds right here. I'm currently
amazing.
285. Yeah, I stack bounties.
What was it? 285?
285 is my light level right now.
You stack bounties. You keep infusing purples.
I do. I bring them along.
I think you would be higher, but you're 285.
You might be right.
You have to pick and choose your battles in that regard because sometimes you do want to infuse your legendaries because they have better perks, and in the long run, it'll be better for you. But in order to get that initial jump, you want to. It doesn't matter if you're using blues or legendaries or greens, whatever has the highest defense or attack value.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. So you're light level and
I'm
level.
I'm 288, and I'm just throwing blues or whatever in there. And I think once I kind of settle in. Because, we're going to start getting raid gear and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. Or maybe we will.
I went from 237 light to 283, and then through all of the blue engrams that you get during the raid, which are a lot, I went to 287. We took a tower stop just to be like, is it going to be easier if we all just got a couple points of light? And it was, so yeah, 287 right now.
So we definitely learned, right, that the separation of the regular level from the light level, we had a feeling the light level would be the new sort of bottleneck, but it's not really a bottleneck in the fact that it moves fairly quickly. You know, the higher your light level goes, it appears, the better blues that will drop along the way or purples that'll drop along the way.
Yeah. So let's just go right into the first topic, our overall impressions, because this all kind of ties in.
Yeah.
So we're talking now about the reward system, kind of. It's there constantly, and it keeps you coming back over and over again.
Yeah,
right?
Loot feels a lot more fair than it has been, right? Mm-hmm. Part of the year one problem with Destiny has been that loot has been miserly or has been stingy. Like, let's be honest, right? There's no worse feeling than going into an event to do things and then come out of it with materials, you know, or without something that you feel, okay, this was worth my time. So far, I feel that, you know, blues, greens, early on in the campaign, blues and greens are dropping fairly regularly with light that you're going to want to use because it doesn't take long to hit 40. So I hit 40, like I said, right away. You guys
you hit
went
it in
the,
3 minutes.
Less than that.
Yeah.
I swear. It was like 1 minute. You guys
you
went through the campaign.
You had a really good strategy.
I did. Yeah. No, I'd heard from friends if you stack up bounties, so there were like 7 5K bounties, and then the rest of my bounty list was 3K or 2.5K.
Yeah.
So I just unleashed.
Like,
and it,
yeah. All right, I'm 40. That was weird.
That was fast. You guys went through the campaign, though. How long did that take?
I finished it on stream in about 3 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. With a pretty solid fire team.
Okay, and that was 40 or like 39 and a half?
Like 39 and like three quarters.
Campaign got me to 40. Because I did some of the bounties and stuff. So
okay, along the way. Got
pick up your bounties and start the campaign if you're just trying to hit 40.
Okay.
You have to do it also to unlock all the other, the really cool side quests and stuff.
Initial impressions of the campaign, fantastic.
Oh,
I thought
good.
It was amazing. Yeah. Like, not only are there great cinematics, but there's a lot of great character development and storytelling. Mm-hmm. Nathan Fillion, I tweeted this out, but he, like,
steals the show a little.
Yeah, the whole campaign is based on his singular brilliant performance. Mm-hmm. Like, he's so funny. He's so charming. He has this great dynamic with Eris, who's a little bit weird.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great back and forth. Ultimately, you feel like you're just part of this world that's been there and has been evolving for a really long time. And I think that that's what Destiny Year One in its entirety was missing.
Yeah. It's
his wit and charm that add a lot to the presentation of the game, you know? And like the other characters, they're also serious. Like Eris is serious. The ball is serious. And he's like, come on, guys. Like, even his character in the tower was kind of fun. And I like that they brought that to life with the cinematics and getting to see these characters interact for the first time.
Yeah, I found it interesting that in Destiny Year One, they spent more time talking about the Traveler and characters like the Speaker and, you
Not
know, this
time
nebulous.
To explain
Oh, the Stranger. Yeah. Like, what did she even ever say that was worth listening to?
And where is she now?
Yeah. Oh, I hope MIA for the rest of the series. For the rest of the sequels. Where I was going with that is just that you had this table at the Vanguard with three characters who you would constantly hear their voices, but nowhere in any cinematic did I feel like they had any presence whatsoever.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, they said nothing. And yet these were supposed to be like top lieutenants and top men and women who lead
top
the Vanguard.
Men.
Yeah, top men. And so in the campaign, like seeing them, you know, developed. Finally, like right after the first mission, you get a cutscene that has this really good exchange between all of them, Nathan Fillion and the other two actors and Eris. And I just felt like, wow, these were the characters you had. And this is what I was looking for in the first game. Like, where was it? And I'm really glad to see it now.
My concern is the only, and I've talked to you about this, Jose, I worry that somebody who comes in fresh with the Taken King, they go through the tutorial and then they'll probably use the Spark of Light if they're playing with friends. They're going to be very confused about who these characters are and like what's happening. Why
I was confused who these characters were.
Yeah, and you
like,
play.
Yeah, and I play regularly.
Well, I mean, basically they feel brand new. I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
Is like, yeah, you may be confused, but no more confused
You'll
than the rest of us.
Yeah.
I think the confusing part would be if you came in, you use the Spark of Light, you play all the Destiny or the Taken King content, and you're like, wow, that was great. I want to go back and experience Year One, and then there's none of that in Year One.
Yeah.
That'll
abandon,
be confusing.
That's
abandon
true.
Those quests. Just
yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You don't need to do it.
I guess hopping in, you kind of accept like, okay, this is a world. There's these people talking to me and like the Cabal are messed up. I guess these are the Cabal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just kind of wonder, I would really like to take a gamer who hasn't played Destiny and let them play it and get their impressions.
Bobby, you're up.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Bobby. Yeah.
There we go.
So how do you guys like fighting the Taken?
The Taken were my favorite part of that game.
I hate
so far.
The Scions that keep splitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like sometimes you're just fighting on one side and you're like, just die. Like, get out of here. You know?
No, but I do like the Taken in that, you know, it's interesting because I don't know if it was by happy accident that Bungie ended up picking a design for an enemy type that also, like, the Gorgon, it looks just like the Gorgon, right? You would say the Gorgons were taken.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe like an inverted.
I think they're separate. I don't know.
They're
probably separate, but
they look similar. But anyway,
what
I especially admire, though, is that each taken has a different strategy. I felt like hours after starting the game, I was still seeing them do new things. Like, when you finally see Vex taken.
Taken Knights.
Yeah,
they act very differently.
You see Taken Knights. You see a lot of different styles. And it's just something that is very refreshing, especially after hundreds of hours playing this game, to encounter these enemies and experience, like, okay, the Scions can separate. Or the Captains, who throw this giant ball of energy that can blind... Not only does it damage you, it blinds you.
It blinds you and limits your, like, field of vision, like, really poorly. Like, you can't see anything when you're doing that.
They
stopped
you from
turtling.
Like, if you were constantly hiding behind rocks and just using cover, you have now have an enemy type that can make you leave.
Yeah.
And you have a problem on your hands. Like, that's really smart.
I like it. Okay, I don't want to spoil this for Jose, but I do want to talk about the raid.
Are we going into the raid segment, or
just in the overall impressions thing.
Yeah.
Sean, early impressions, just thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up. It's been phenomenal.
Yeah. I will also say I really
like
it.
Without getting into details, Bungie really stepped up their game and gave audiences and players what they were desiring when it came to raid mechanics and stuff.
Yeah, I really like it.
Yeah.
I'm excited to continue my pathway through it without spoiling anything, but yeah.
You did say something that was interesting to me when I came out and was chowing down on some pizza. You said you thought it was a little bit easier than the other raid struck you at first. Can you elaborate a little?
Yeah, so like...
Very carefully.
I'll talk about earlier raids and my experience with those.
I could hang with those. Go.
Yeah, with Vault of Glass...
Spoiler alert for Vault of Glass, guys. year-old raid.
Vault of Glass, first time you do it, it says recommended light level 26, and you hop in there and you get... kind of stomped
at 26.
At 26, you actually want to go in around 28 probably for your first vanilla Destiny. I'm talking same thing with Crotazen. You go in there at 28 it's 31, right? Or what was it?
Crotazen was 32, wasn't it?
Crotazen base was
no
30.
Max was 32.
It was
you're
like
right.
30
you're
and
right.
then max 32.
Yeah,
so like you go in there at 28, you're gonna have a hard time. Like right now the rate is recommended 290. We're going in
290 light.
Yeah, 290 light. We're going in at 280, and I'm not getting creamed is my only point.
Well,
it's kind of nice.
None of us finished, so.
Well, yeah, and you're seeing that also in other parts of the game, right?
It's difficult.
Where, like, the Nightfall, the Weekly, the new Heroic Strike playlist that I'm forgetting the name, but it's the top
Vanguard
tier one.
Heroic,
yeah, the Vanguard Heroic. You'll see the recommended light. Could be within 10 of what you have, but you can show up with roughly 10 and hang.
We did the Nightfall last night, and we did it about 5-6 under, per character, and we were okay.
Yeah, I did.
But it was a challenge.
Well,
but
that's
not
the thing,
insurmountable.
I did the Nightfall last night in order to level up really quickly, and I was doing it about 10 to 15 points light under, and I definitely saw a significant drop off at around that light level change. But yeah, I think if you're 10 or less under, it'll be tougher, but it's not insurmountable, like you said. But I think people are underestimating that jump in 10 light. That's a huge amount of effort. Like, it's not easy to jump 10 points of light once you get past, like, the 260 area.
Yeah.
And I think that's evident in the raid. I find it very challenging. Of course, I never did Vault of Glass or Crota's End when they released, so I'm a little biased.
So, yeah, I mean, sorry, just a last point to add here. I do feel, though, like... this is a positive direction, but it is kind of a surprising direction to me because I've spent the last year playing this game a certain way and now going into it. I wasn't expecting that. I'm very pleased with it, but it's just it's interesting because I have not encountered an expansion like this where I am relearning so much about the game.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like light level is definitely at the top of the list of – holy cow, this really does change the way you are playing activities and what you're doing in activities. I just wanted to share that one point that it's just surprising to me just how much I'm learning along the way because of these changes.
It's a very different game in year two.
Yeah.
For sure.
Last thing I wanted to bring up about my overall impressions is I have a little bit of concern about the specialness of purples. I feel like it's been greatly reduced to the point that, like, a lot of people are just going to wear blues. I mean, you talked about perks.
I think we're early.
You know, Yeah, we're early, so we don't really know why they're special, but I'm just kind of a little bit confused about all the changes with the Engram system.
Well, yeah, I can tell you that there are a couple of purples I have, legendary pieces of gear that have unique perks to them that I didn't expect to see attached to them. So, mm-hmm. for example, I have this one weapon that it's good against Hive. Mm-hmm. I have another weapon that I just opened a perk on. It's a scout rifle that has an advantage against Taken. So you're seeing sort of the very specific perks that were tied to like Crota's End weapons or to Vault of Glass weapons, but you're seeing them distributed in other places, mm-hmm. in legendaries. I haven't noticed that on blues. You also see that in the case of legendary gear right now, where, for example, I have a chest piece that has a void damage buff. Mm-hmm. So on the Nightfall, if void is active, I'm taking less damage as a result because of that, which is that's a good thing to have.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That's so far what I've noticed. Like, I've always had trouble keeping up with the stat game on a lot of the gear. Like, I say that openly because it's always struck me as not really clear. But one thing that is clear so far is that the perks attached to legendaries, mm-hmm. still stand out. You can be a blue. You can wear completely blue gear, but those are empty calories. Like, you're not really rocking something that, mm-hmm. is ultimately, I think, really good in the gear game. But Infusion does change things up a lot, and it does make it sort of a struggle to try and understand or make choices. Like, do I continue to burn legendary marks and blues, higher level blues, into this purple to bring it along with me? So, because I really like this one thing that this piece of gear has, mm-hmm. I find myself struggling with that choice constantly.
I'm still
game.
Using Apple of Discord, which is a quest reward, I think. It's a pulse rifle. It's
How
really
far
good.
Did you get it up in terms of light level?
It's at 292 right
wow,
now.
Wow,
no,
that's good. Yeah,
but
that's good.
At one
Anything
point,
over 290 is
But
good.
At one point, it was 242. And I would, like you pointed out, I would consistently get blue and green weapons that were better than it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, so what I... The way I dealt with that was, like, I had this idea of, like, okay, I have a potential light level, and I have, like, my actual light level. And so I would equip it and see what my min-max was. And if it was a significant bump, then I would keep the legendary, use the the blue until I got high enough up. Mm-hmm. And then I would use it to infuse and just bring the legendary along with me, mm-hmm. until I got it high enough to the point where it's my best weapon, which it is now.
Yeah,
I think that... The further people get into the raid and the deeper they go, the better the rewards are going to be, the more you're going to see people start that transition to legendary.
Yeah.
But early on, right before you're getting raid ready, the most important part is to get the highest amount of light, which sometimes is not available on the early legendaries you're getting in the game.
Yeah.
We do have to move on. Oh, wait. What's your overall thought? Like, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Okay, I have one more point to make. I'm sorry. It's just, I just want to point out that Infusion changes the game so much because even an exotic that you get that isn't for your character has utility. You can take that, and if it is a helmet, you know, I got a Warlock helmet last night. I wasn't playing Warlock. You can infuse it, put it towards something else, and that raises that stat. Ultimately, I do like that they've added that system. I think so far as the expansion goes, it is a thumbs up. There's still some quests still have a very like grindy like behavior.
Yes,
like,
I know exactly the one you're talking about.
I had to run around getting I just did a quest line where I had to run around getting
Fallen kills.
Just Fallen Kills. There was primary targets.
Oh, okay.
And those you find those on patrols. Those are missions you can pick up, but you can't always find them in
Is it the one where you have to do like three on each planet?
Yeah.
I have that quest. Yeah. I haven't even started yet because all of my fire team was like, don't do that one yet.
That one takes forever because sometimes you'll just go to Mars and there isn't a primary target mission in sight, mm-hmm. for a while. And so you go back to space, you go back to Mars. You're just going between like these two places. And that could, whatever. Like, we're playing the game at an accelerated pace. So obviously, it's easy to get frustrated by things like that, and I'm not trying to be hard on the game for it, but there are still grindy-like activities like that where there's just this ultra-specific thing they want you to do. I think the quests are at their best when there's a unique mission involved, even if it's treading over space I've been to before. In the end, the expansion as a whole, so far, is a thumbs up. Like, I really like the changes. I really feel like there's a lot more to do. Campaign wraps, and I've still got a bunch of quests logged that I have to take care of. And that's great, because that's going to keep me coming back to play the game.
Your final review is coming soon, though.
Monday.
Monday?
Yeah, whether I like it or not. Monday.
All right. Sean, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah, big thumbs up for
real
me.
Real quick, because we really do got to move on.
Big thumbs up for me. It's been a resounding success. I've been enjoying every minute of it. Normally, when I play things at an accelerated pace, like I want to take a really big break because I'm just like, I burned myself out. But no, I want to get back to it. I feel like there's still so much more for me to do. And that was the big problem with year one, was like you had to do the same things over and over again. Now it's like, no, I have tons and tons of more quests to do and other things to be farming for and things to be trying to accomplish. So,
yeah,
big thumbs up.
Definitely. I really like it. It's got its hooks back. It has its hooks back in me. Mm. And I think it's getting its hooks into a lot of people, because like once you're in, you're kind of like stuck, like not stuck. Maybe that's a bad way to put it, but like you just want to keep coming back.
You're engaged.
Yeah. You want to keep coming back. You want to keep hanging out with your friends in the Crucible or hanging out in a raid or whatever. And I'm really, really happy with it.
Cool.
Moving on, we're going to talk about Xur and some of his new systems. So Xur is in the tower this weekend. I'll start with you, Sean. What do you think about the new set of engrams and everything?
So I don't know if this is something that's going to be...
Maybe we should explain, just in case you haven't seen Xur yet.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, but there's now a legacy engram you can get, which is you can get a certain year one type of weapon. Like, I think it's heavy this week.
It was heavy this week, yeah.
You can get a year two helmet engram this weekend, meaning you have a chance at a helmet engram. Jose discovered that you don't necessarily get one for your class three times.
That's how we
got the stag three times.
And you don't even run a warlock.
I have one, but I still didn't want the stag three times in a row.
Yeah, and then there's the three of coins, which you spend three strange coins on, and that gives you a higher chance at exotic drops, and a lot of people are abusing that right now, and I'm going to when I go home.
But that's something
stuff.
You buy... Like, that's a consumable, like, same as a telemetry or something like that. It's not, like, one of the slots of an exotic.
Yeah, it's a consumable, and it just gives you a higher chance at an exotic, and it stacks.
I used one, and it...
I've used two, and I've gotten boned, so...
I can't remember, but I haven't gotten exotic yet.
Yeah, it's been not great for me. But I'm going to go try a few things tonight.
And then one of each class item, like
the
last time it used
to be. Arms?
Two arms pieces and a helm piece this week, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was Helm of Innermost Light.
No, Insurmountable Skull
Insurmountable Skull Fort.
It was the Titan Helm this
week. And then I got that other one from an engram, and I got Helm of Saint 14, and I got a bunch of really good helmets this week. I got the astronaut helmet,
nice.
Which adds tracking to any rocket launcher.
Super good.
Aim down sight, radar still on with any rocket launcher, and like just a bunch of really good perks.
You fancy.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about the new systems, and how do you feel about the fact that there isn't a guaranteed weapon at Xur every week?
I think that sucks, but only because I don't have any great exotic weapons. I can understand why they would do that. The philosophy there is that there's a lot of players who feel like Xur is the only way they can get exotic weapons regularly and continually, and that shouldn't be the case. Like, you shouldn't think about Xur as your primary way of getting exotics.
Someone on Reddit, I wish I could remember the username, wrote, I guess Bungie's trying to distinguish the difference between something that you earned and something that you Xurned. I was like, what?
Yeah. That's really good.
That's super funny.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, that is the philosophy. I totally get that.
Do you remember the time I adventured for 3 weeks and then paid somebody some money and he gave me a cool weapon?
Yeah.
You know,
I guess
that's
that's
not the story they want players telling.
Exactly. I guess I was just a little bit butthurt because like at 3 a.m. last night I was like, if Xur has a weapon, that'll put me over the edge and I can go to sleep, and then
it
didn't, and I was like, no.
Well, and then you look at the collection system, which has now become
an avenue to
get year two exotics, but the year two exotics you get there are 280. They're capped at 280, but a piece of gear that drops is 290.
Yeah.
Or can be higher.
That is also something that's wigged me out about the attack and defense value system, is that before, like, you know, you got...
Exotics are 290. That's so weird.
You got something at 290 or whatever it was, and then you could level it up as you used it and get it up to its max, but it would drop higher than that. Like, you didn't have to upgrade it that much. Now they start, like, lower than gear that you're already getting just randomly.
The one
that's
you can get
super weird.
The blueprints are 280. Exotics you get from Xur are 290. Max light level is 310.
Yep.
You know, so it's just like, how do you infuse that into the light level you need it to be? You just can't.
Well, it's really, really hard to get Well, that's the thing.
It's hard to get a 300 anything.
Before attack value and defense value didn't really mean anything other than that you wanted to get to the max to say that you were at the max, right? Yeah. But now it has a direct effect on your light. Mm-hmm. So it actually, philosophically, it should be harder to level it up, right? Because you're still trying to progress as far as you can. Light's the new progression, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it is weird to like see that you can buy an exotic, which is self-proclaimed the best items in the game, and they're lower than what you're already using.
Yeah, right.
Or like, there are blues that have higher value than that if you've been infusing them.
There's blues that can drop up to 295, I think is the highest blue I have. And the fact that my exotic is worse than that is... What? It doesn't make any sense.
But it's not really worse is the thing, right?
Because I know. Because of the perks.
Yeah.
So, like, perks is where you get the value there, but it's like...
I like Jose's empty calories metaphor. Yeah. Mm, that is what it is.
That's true.
How do you feel about Zero Jose?
Real quick question, though. Is it always a legacy heavy? Or, I mean, a legacy weapon that's going to be taking up a slot?
No. It'll sometimes be armor. It'll sometimes be weapons. Yeah.
But is it always legacy?
Yes.
One of them will be a legacy.
So dumb.
So well, I think they want you to get your year ones if you didn't.
They also said that this isn't final for Xur yet. Like, it could change next week.
Okay, because let me just throw it out there. If the whole point of moving to year two was to don't keep your Fatebringer, don't keep your Galahorn, don't keep any of this stuff, but every time Xur comes, buy that stuff because, why?
He clearly has three more slots that could be filled. They just aren't this week. And they said he might adjust.
Yeah, but granted, maybe the people who are trying really hard to gather up and collect
all
the exotics.
I still want my RAM from year one. Like, I'm a collector.
Yeah.
I'm crazy about collecting.
No, the point I wanted to make is just maybe the people who wanted to collect exotics probably collected them all by now. But I think the thinking there is just giving people an avenue to get that baseball card. Like, that's really all that's there for. And granted, the folks who were trying, like, I'm just finding out, like, last night or this morning, like, you had, like, something like 300 strange coins. I have friends who play on Xbox who have, like, a crazy amount of strange coins from the amount they've played and they've been through the grind. So it's giving you something to spend it on if the collection's incomplete, and that's something that means something to you.
And it has a high chance of something you don't have, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Do you know if you discovered a year one, it opens up the blueprint for a year two?
Yeah.
Does that work for legacy stuff?
Yeah,
it should.
So if you bought it,
as long as you get it.
Yeah. So let's say I don't have a truth yet. I never found a truth ever. If I purchased a legacy engram and it was a truth, could I buy a year two truth?
Yeah,
but
you'd need the marks. You'd still need the marks for it.
That's interesting. So there's still use for it then.
Yeah, but I noticed something.
I wonder if you get it from a Xur engram though. If it does the so, if you get a year two drop and you want to rebuy it, you can just buy it for a shard.
Hmm.
But if you haven't found it yet, you have to use marks to get it.
Yes,
I wonder if you bought it from Xur and then you got that thing, if you still had to use marks to get the year two. Probably, unfortunately.
No, I'm not sure. I think the answer to that question actually happened to me last night because it was the first time I noticed that if I had the year one version before I got something from Xur.
You bought a legacy.
Yes. Yeah. No, I didn't buy a legacy, actually. Oh, okay. I didn't have the coins for that. Anyway, I wanted to move forward though and just say, no, I like what they're doing with Xur. The three of coins I think is smart. Mm-hmm. You're just giving people a way to draw an exotic more often. Like, I feel like at one point I was expecting activities to do that more, but having not experienced a raid, I'm curious to see how many of those checkpoints actually pull from the loot table, if they pull from the loot table. Because I walked by your desk and said, "Did you get anything cool?" And you said, "Not yet, just something that I don't know what to do with yet."
Yeah.
And I'm staying away from Reddit to not find out what that is.
Big zero exotics, and I made it through four bosses.
Okay.
Any weapons or armor?
No weapons or armor either.
Okay. Anyway, we should move on to the final subject.
Before you tackle the final subject and I leave, I feel like it is a disservice to this game in our review impressions to not have spoken about the Dreadnought.
Okay.
True.
The Dreadnought is the new patrol space is another part of one of my favorite things right now in the Taken King because there is so much mystery to that place. And it's not just because it's a foreign place. Mm-hmm. It's just that you are finding chests and you are finding drops And there's no clear instruction for what this thing is for sometimes. Mm-hmm. For example, a Cabal key dropped, and I'm like, well, what's this for?
I got
and
a bunch of calcified fragments before I was like, what are these for?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I, a friend tells me, oh, come over here to this console, plug that in. All of a sudden, a dropship, you see a dropship from outside space coming in to drop off the first wave of enemies, and then it'll drop off a boss. Mm-hmm. And then you go through this whole mini quest line. I love what they're doing with the Dreadnought. It's a bummer you can't use your Sparrow there. There's no fast way to get around. But in terms of giving you a lot of different activities, taking chances on different boss mechanics, and giving you rewards for it, I like that space. And I think the Cosmodrome, Mars, the Moon, and Venus, I don't want to be there unless I'm in a quest.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas the Dreadnought, I kind of want to be there whenever I can, if I have time to kill.
Definitely. I agree with you. We really have to move on to the final subject.
Absolutely.
And you have to go, actually.
And I
got to
go because I don't want spoilers. Enjoy the talk. Thanks a lot for listening to the show, and thanks for having me again.
Yeah, of course.
Sweet.
Goodbye, Jose.
I'm out of here.
We'll be right back after a transition edit.
Facing Oryx was never the end. Deep within the Dreadnought, his horde draws breath. You cannot face this alone. Six of you must rise and stand together as the king falls.
All right, so now we're going to get into spoiler territory.
Killer Crossfade.
Yeah, Killer Crossfade. I like that.
Yeah.
The Star Wipes and all the cool stuff that happened. It's just a crossfade. I'm not going to do anything that crazy. Anyway, we're going to talk about the raid, King's Fall. We both got to experience it today for the first time. We haven't completed it yet. That congratulations goes out to Gathalion, who beat it right before we came in to record.
Yeah, so it was crazy because for the first four bosses, there were about three or four crews, myself and yours being one of them, that were all kind of neck to neck.
Yeah.
My team lost a little bit of pace on the third encounter, which is the...
Ogre?
No, he's the big knight, the really big knight. The war priest.
Yeah.
Who I misread as Warpiest. And I was like...
That's a different kind of boss,
yeah,
John.
I was like, who's the Warpiest? Why is he deeming me worthy? And I was like, that just sounds like a weird name.
Yeah.
So now I've just been calling him the Warpiest because I think it's funny. But we lost a bit of time on War Priest. That's a difficult encounter. And we finally beat him.
I like that encounter a lot.
They're all great. But yeah, we finally beat him and made it to the Ogre, and that's where we're stuck.
Yeah, both of us.
You also got stuck there too, right?
Yeah, we're stuck in the Ogre. We're trying to figure out the best way to get the DPS on the character right now. Let's go back to the beginning of the raid, though. So it starts out pretty easy. You kind of got to move some relics around, and God, it's just fun.
Yeah, so first off, the raid is awesome.
Yeah.
Basically,
it has elements of Vault of Glass. It has teamwork mechanics, like the bridge encounter in Crota's End, which is one of my favorite things ever. And I'm just so happy with it. This is a really, really good raid experience.
Yeah, all of the people out there who levied criticism at Bungie for making bullet sponge bosses, well, guess what? The bosses are still strong. You still have to do a lot of damage in order to kill them, but there's a lot of really interesting new mechanics that they've added to boss fights in general, and more specifically the raid, that make them way more interesting and intricate and complex in order to be able to do. For instance, so far, the War Priest has been my favorite encounter.
Definitely.
It's really, really interesting. I want to talk a little bit about that. Basically, are we allowed to talk about what... I mean, do we want to talk about what you actually do in the raid?
Yeah, that's fine. Somebody beat it, so the record's out there. You
spoiler
know?
Alert, if you don't want to know how to do it and you want to explain it, this is where we spoil it all for you.
Yeah.
So the War Priest encounter is awesome because you have this giant knight. He's sitting up on a platform, and you can't damage him. Yeah, you can't damage him at all until you activate these three platforms, and you got to do it in a specific order, right? And once you activate...
Do you know you can figure out the order and how?
Yeah, so it took us a while to figure that out. Like,
we had that a little ahead of you, and I'm like, God, like, can I message? Should I text him and let him know?
That would have been nice, but yeah. So there are these three giant rocks that we were calling tomes that have an order inscribed in light on the front of the rock, and also if you have someone standing behind them, they light up on the back to tell you which order to activate them in. So we had both. You know, we knew the order in our heads, and then we had Lloyd Man, one of my fire team guys, stand behind on the platform out of sight of the boss and tell us activate left, now activate right, now activate center, and you have to do it in the same order or else you mess up the sequence and you die. But after you activate the sequence in the proper order, one of you gets a buff that's this red sort of aura that extends in a radius in either direction. And if your whole team stands in it, then you can damage the boss. The problem is it's timed, it runs out after 10 seconds, but if that person has the foresight, they can kill adds, which extends the duration. And so,
but it also speeds up in rage.
Yeah, exactly. It speeds up the, you know, we didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So if he shoots too many adds too fast, then it speeds up in rage and then you get less DPS on him. So our strat was let that guy die and everybody else DPSs him with weapons of light. And it worked amazingly well.
So our thing was that the problem we kept running into was that we weren't doing enough damage. That was the thing, is like the first 10, maybe 11 attempts, we were just we couldn't kill him fast enough. Like he would always enrage when we were at like 25%. So we thought about this and we were like, well, if you let the aura, at the end of the timer on the aura, it kills the person who has the aura.
Yes.
But you can renew it up to 3 times, which gives you an extra 10 seconds, right? So what we just said was, all right, let's get the first 10 seconds,
we'll just
do damage.
Yeah.
We'll kill one ad, do another 10 seconds, kill another ad, do another 10 seconds, and then on the third one, we just let it kill him. Because
so you just
kill
one ad, and that gives you 10 seconds.
Yeah, that extends it by 10 seconds.
Got it.
But the thing is, you have the first 10 seconds, so you kill an ad, get a new 10 seconds, kill another ad, get a new 10 seconds.
It's kind of like the poison mechanic on Skolas.
Yeah, but instead of killing a third ad and extending it to the maximum, you let it kill you, because then it moves to a new person.
Yeah.
And they can extend it one more time and then another time. And you can stack it up to almost 90 seconds.
How much damage did you do per section?
We figured a good baseline was about 30%.
Got it.
We wanted to do a third of his health per tome. You have 3 tomes, right?
Yeah.
There's one in the center, one on the left, one on the right. But on the attempt that we cleared it, we did almost 50%.
Yeah.
Like, we just had everything.
On the first run.
Yeah, like, we had weapons.
The first tome.
Yeah, we had weapons of light. Yeah. We had a hunter, like, shackle him down. Mm-hmm. I was hurling, like, every single one of my
hammers
crit, and we were just doing, like, hella amounts of damage.
Yeah.
But, man, like, what an awesome encounter. It gets really intense. Like, the way the room is designed makes it so that you have to move. You have to make sure that, like... Oh, and the other thing is, like, he'll activate the Oculus at the end of every aura.
Oh, and you have to hide.
And you have to hide behind the tomes.
In the shadow.
Like, anywhere else, you will get wrecked by the Oculus.
And it's right, center, left.
Yeah, and then when the Oculus activates and destroys everything in the room, it'll also destroy the tomes, so you can't hide in that same spot again. And just being able to juggle all of these elements together made it super interesting, and it's just, like,
and
one of the more
clear.
Complex encounters I've ever done in... Yeah. Destiny, for sure.
Yeah, it was clear, and you were able to figure it out because of how it was designed.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that part. Now we're on the ogre. Now, the ogre, I kind of know what to do, but we're having a little bit of trouble.
Yeah,
so,
we have a general strat as well. We have we've gotten him to 50% once. Every other time, we wipe it like 80, and we just can't get it.
Yeah, the ogre's all about DPS. There's these things you can shoot on the ceiling. They fall down, and if you stand in that, you get
Golgoroth
a huge...
Golgoroth is his name. Side
Golgoroth.
Note. Our fire team just kept calling him Fogoth.
Yeah. That's funny. So anyway, you shoot the things, they fall down, and if you stand in the light, you get a huge damage boost, but... If somebody's not in his gaze, then he will
punch people,
destroy you basically on the ground. So we have 2 people dedicated to just keeping his gaze one side or the other side, because you have to shoot him in the back to pull his gaze. So one person has to be on each side of the map. And then there's ad sections where you got to kill ads. It's a very complex thing.
Yeah, there were some people in our Twitch stream who were just saying, like, this just looks like Fogoth. And I'm like, whoa, buddy. Like, just because he's an ogre, like, it's a far more complex.
Don't be alienist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know what they are. Yeah.
Basically, no, you're right. Uh-huh. They're aliens. It's a very, very complex encounter. We have the idea of what you're supposed to do, but we haven't been able to execute it yet. But yeah, like you said, he has two weak spots in his stomach and on his back.
Yeah.
What happens when his back is open, he has these like claw things that kind of retract.
Yeah.
And when it's open, you can shoot him in the back for extra damage, but doing so causes them to close, and he gazes at you, which means he shoots hella orbs at you that poison you and do damage, and he also shoots his laser at you.
You can shoot the orbs, though.
You can shoot the orbs,
if you just constantly shoot the orbs, you're fine.
But
you'll
he shoots
good.
A lot of orbs at you, and if you miss one, it poisons you, and then you get slower, which makes him harder to dodge the orbs. So what we've been doing is just running around and dodging them. Mm-hmm. While the rest of the fire team sits on the floor in front of him, because when he's gazing at these people on the top floor of the room, he doesn't damage people in front of him, and that allows them to use snipers and shotguns to shoot him in the stomach, his other vulnerable spot, for tons amount of damage, and then you get even bonus, like you pointed out, you get even more damage
if you're standing in those pools.
Yeah, by shooting, we call them raindrops, because you shoot them and it drops like this big glob of water onto the ground, and if you stand in that, you get bonus damage. Mm-hmm. So like,
and if you die five times, you activate a rune in the back, and everybody dies.
Exactly.
Like, it's just a wipe.
Six times.
Six times.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, so basically what we're aiming at is, like, the boss still has a ton, whatever, I don't know. Yeah. I think it's six, but I can't remember. The point is that, like, yeah, he's an ogre, but this is a far more complex and different encounter. You're doing a lot more varied things, and you have to be in such great communication with your team in order to be able to make it anywhere near it. And On one great encounter, like I said, we made it to 50%. Every other time, we wiped at 80%. It's a very tough encounter.
But I don't feel discouraged at all. I feel like it's doable.
Like it's time.
It's just going to take practice as a team and working together. But like, I'm not frustrated like I used to get.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Really like it. Going back earlier in the raid, though, there's also another jumping puzzle. Like,
oh,
it's...
I love it, dude.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, so one of the coolest things that I heard when they were teasing, like, what they were just going to be doing with the raid was more platforming and stuff. There's two separate parts where your team has to coordinate and jump across kind of a lot of really complex moving elements. Yeah. There's this
big swinging, like, chandelier thing.
Yeah, which
that called,
one's pretty easy. But, yeah, like, there's you know... Like, imagine, like, you know, American Ninja Warrior or something, where you have to run in a straight line to get across, but there are these moving platforms that swing back and forth, and you have to jump from one to the other. If you're not a noob or if you take your time, it's not hard to land those jumps. The second one, the ships, that's a lot harder. You have to jump
there's
along.
There's a specific pattern. I'm guessing there's hidden stuff in that area, too.
Yeah, so there's, like, there's this big chasm that is unjumpable unless you jump along. It's probably, like, 10, 11, maybe even 12 different ships jumps where you have to jump from one platform onto a ship like a Taken or whatever, a Hive ship that's warping in from the outside of the dreadnought, and then another one will appear behind you and above you and below you, and you have to figure out the right order in which on them to jump, because there's a whole bunch of them going in different directions.
Yeah,
and sometimes they disappear and go to warp, and other times, like, they try, one's coming right at, and you're like, that one looks a little too high, but then, like, by the time it gets to your ship, it's just going to knock you off unless you move. Like, it's really kind of cool, and you just have to, like, Mario your way across this chasm.
Yeah.
And
it's visually interesting, too.
It's fun, it's interesting, and it's just, like, it wasn't frustrating at all. Like, I thought it was super fun to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not very hard, like, once you figure it out, but, like you pointed out, there's probably a lot of, like...
stuff we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, or like if you take a different route, like you'll find, you know...
a chest.
Yeah, a chest or a ghost or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what it is, but that's super cool to me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. Overall, I'm really enjoying the raid. I can't wait to complete it. But big thumbs up from us.
Me too. Yeah, same here. I wish I could talk about Oryx more because we haven't even made it there yet.
I saw him. That's it.
Yeah, I saw him.
Because I saw Gathalion's stream.
Yeah,
where I
jumped in on Gathalion's stream just to see where they were. And I looked at the encounter and I was like, whoa, that looks cool. And at that point, I was like, I don't want to look more because I want to experience it for myself. Mm-hmm. But so far, huge thumbs up for the raid from me. Like, the mechanics are really interesting. I would love to emphasize that they're complex. Like, it's not just like avoid getting attacked and shoot him a lot. You have to do all kinds of things in order to be able to damage bosses, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, and like, unless you're a hardcore Destiny player, I don't know if you'll ever play this raid.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like
290.
Yeah, I feel like it's really hard.
Yeah.
I feel like it's really hard. There are a lot of people out there who are, if you're playing solo or if your fire team, you know, just likes to take things at their own pace, like they're at 250, 260 light.
Yeah.
I put in just a monumental amount of time over one night.
The last 3 days, we've stayed up super late.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you and Jose have been up until like 3 a.m. every day. I skipped out on Wednesday and Thursday because I had stuff to do here, and then I just put in a 12-hour day. Balls to the wall, like as efficient farming as you can with the best players that I know farming.
Plus, there's like
and I got
people
there.
Out there now. They're like, do this, do this, do this.
Yeah,
you know, and it'll help you get there.
Yeah. I was very lucky to have the experience of these guys. They were like, okay, do you have this quest, this quest, this quest? Okay, those ones give you marks.
Yeah.
And I had this, like, for those of you wondering how I went from 237 to 283 light in one night, I laid out
Farm
a strategy. Like, I laid out a strategy. Yeah, yeah. Like, I was like, the first things you got to do is you got to do these quests that all give you marks, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're going to collect marks in order to buy, like, a ghost or, like, a PvP weapon. Mm-hmm. Then I had hundreds of motes of light that I spent on rep with your faction, because every time you rank up a faction, you get a legendary package, which could be better than what you're using. So I did a bunch of those. I farmed Court of Oryx so much. Special thanks to God, I'm forgetting the people I have to shout out to, but there's two people that I have to shout out to, which I will do later on, who basically allowed us to use that swapping mechanism that allows you to use more people in Court of Oryx. You know, you know what I'm talking about?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, so you can only attack. You can only use three people per fire team in Court of Oryx. But if you send one person over to a new fire team, have those other two players back out, and then have that person invite you back over, you can do it with six people as opposed to three. So that allowed us to do tiers 1, 2, and 3 way faster and more times than everyone else, because we can use everyone's runes. So I did that for like 3 hours, and I jumped from like 237 to like 260, and then at that point I started farming the heroic strikes and the nightfall, and I did, I don't know, 30 strikes or something.
I
like that.
The nightfall a lot too.
Nightfall
just
was
the
awesome.
Perfect amount of challenge.
Oh, can we talk about the new strikes too? New strikes are awesome.
Yeah, and like, the fact
very
that
cool.
you're rewarded for staying in them.
Yes,
that's so good.
Awesome strikes, like just another great thing that they iterated upon,
and that they changed that the Taken are in some of them.
Yeah, the Taken are in some of them, and sometimes you'll get like I played the same strike a couple of times, and sometimes it'd be the regular Cabal, sometimes it'd be the Taken, and they play differently now because the. You know, they're different enemies. That's super cool. And yeah, you just farm your way all the way up. But I had like a set plan, and people were like, this quest, and then we're going to do Court of Oryx. And then after that, hopefully you'll be at 260, and then we can do the Nightfall. And then after the Nightfall, hopefully you're, you know, there, and that's how
what,
I did
what'd
it.
What'd you get on the Nightfall?
Like, what do you mean?
What'd
reward?
You get for a reward?
I can't remember.
Anything good?
No, not that I remember. Oh, I think I got marks.
Really?
I think so.
Like 25 or something?
I remember having like a remark being like, that's it.
I got Xur's 3 of coins. I got 5 of them.
Oh, okay.
And I was kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Because like, I'm like, I needed armor.
Yeah, no, I think...
you know, I needed armor or a weapon, and I got this thing. And then I burned one, and we killed some ultras, and I didn't get anything. And then I burned another one on the raid, and I didn't get anything. I'm like, why?
That's my thing, is I have gotten no armor or weapons from the raid yet, and I used 3 of coins the whole time. Yeah. I haven't gotten anything from quests or strikes or anything. I've been very unlucky. I did get one exotic from a legendary engram.
Oh,
and
nice.
It was
something new?
No, it's the Crest of Alpha Loopy. Loopy, whatever. I don't know. It's fine, though. It's the piece I'm using, and the chest piece is pretty good. And then I got the one piece I got so far in the raid was I got a really nice ghost shell. It's a 309 or 310
or
something.
Oh, nice. I need one of those.
Yeah,
I
and that bumped me up a lot, too.
I need an artifact and a ghost shell. Those are my lowest stats right now.
Yeah, so those. That's how I did it. That's what I got, and it's been really cool so far.
Cool. All right, I think that's all we needed to talk about raid-wise.
Yeah, I mean, we could go on forever and ever, but we're already long.
We're loving the DLC, so it's great. Any last thoughts, Sean?
No, I mean, follow me on Twitter at @IamFinnegan. I'm going to be playing a lot of Destiny, as I'm sure you are. So if you want to come talk to me about that or ask me about quests and strategies and all that stuff, I'm obviously available for that. I played some really interesting game this week that I can't quite talk about, but you'll hear about it all next week. So come talk to me about that one too on Twitter.
An interesting game.
Yeah, exactly. That's about it for me.
Follow me on Twitter at Destin Legere. If you like the show, check out go.ign.com/store. We have a t-shirt there you can buy, and leave us a review on iTunes. That helps us out if you like it. If you don't, I don't think you've listened this long. So, but thanks anyway. Until next time,
Guardians out.
We're a little tired.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.